All right. Yes, yes, yes. I am back on my green light grind, oblivious to red lights and stop signs. I'm colorblind. The cold climate of my city tends to have me inclined to drive slow, so I burn rubber in summertime. Supper time, I grind slow to savor the flavor, the taste of victory sitting sweet on my tongue, and I'm so
back in the cold, back in the cold, back in the cold, back in the cold.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn, the Lord of Laughter, Old Man Wade. Normally, I'm joined by Super Woke Javi and Brandon Orton, but they are unavailable. And after the Deadpool 3 trailer dropped today, there was no way I could go without recording and talking about it. Beyond the fact that it's one of the, if not the highest anticipated, beside it being one of the most highly anticipated comic book movies of, maybe the last like five years, the first trailer was great, it was jokey, it was goofy, but it was more of a teaser than an actual trailer. So today, Deadpool and Wolverine, an actual trailer drop where we got to see Hugh Jackman in the yellow costume as Wolverine. There was no more speculation on, like, you know, would he do this? Was it just going to be a quick cameo? Like, no, Wolverine is going to be a major part of Deadpool and Wolverine. But again, the title says Deadpool and Wolverine, but that actually doesn't necessarily mean anything, because sometimes Marvel likes to throw curveballs at you and do things that kind of like, and do certain things to kind of get you into it. But this looks like it's going to be an actual featured movie with Deadpool and Logan, and I'm super happy for it. And there are some things you may or may not have missed during the trailer, so I kind of wanted to break those down a little bit. First off, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman's chemistry was flawless. Considering both of them are accomplished actors, no one should be shocked. And Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool is one of the two or three best comic book adaptations that we've seen in maybe any superhero movie, period. The only ones that may come close is Christopher Reeve as Superman and Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark / Iron Man. What he's done with the previous two movies and now with the trailers for Deadpool 3 is unprecedented. And I honestly feel that once this movie ends, Ryan Reynolds will be the best actor portrayal, or whatever you want to call it, for a superhero character. That's hero, villain, anti-hero, whatever. After this movie, I think he's going to be like top dog of all of it. I have no complaints about what I've seen so far. I love the fact that he's still him. Like, this is a MC, this is the first Deadpool movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They've made hints of that, especially at the end where when Blind Al asks Wade if he wants to do some coke, and he goes, Kevin Feige says, like, we can't do that. And they go through the whole things, like, he's like, oh, like, do you want to build a snowman? And, like, references to doing coke, and it was absolutely hysterical. But, so, like, now we know that this is actually officially going to be a thing, and there's actually a lot riding on this Deadpool 3 movie, with a lot of people kind of losing faith in Marvel Studios, and I don't think they should, but, you know, people have their opinions and their thoughts, and don't get me wrong, there have been some bad Marvel projects over the last year, looking at you, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumanium. But this is going to, not just even just for the MCU or Marvel Studios, superhero movies in general, this is going to bring everybody to the theaters. People love Hugh Jackman, people love Wolverine, people love Ryan Reynolds, and people love Deadpool. So that's four reasons for people to go see it. On top of it being an action movie, on top of it being very funny, and on top of it being like a summer blockbuster, there's almost no way this movie can fail. I say almost because we've seen weird things happen and it kind of ruins a person's personality or their standing within a community or just standing in life in general. So hopefully nothing like that happens, but it should be fine. Speaking of their greatness, one of the other things I want to talk about is the eventual fight between Logan and Deadpool and how epic it's going to be. Both of these gentlemen have healing factors that are just beyond anything we've seen. I'm wondering if Deadpool's is going to be a little bit heightened because of his fight with Wolverine. Are we going to see him heal a little bit quicker like he does in the comic books, where it kind of takes seconds for him to heal from scars that we've seen him take hours to heal from in the previous Deadpool movies? One scene that I love in particular was when Logan was laying on Deadpool and Wade just kept shooting Logan in his ribs, and I was like, oh, this is so dope. And my wife was like, oh yeah, they both have healing factors. So, oh yeah, this is gonna be amazing. Or when Logan had his claws popped and gave Wade a Johnny Cage special to the groin, which was, I was like, oh, they're really going there with this. So I'm super happy about that. And that's probably going to be the one thing people are going to be looking forward to, other than like the buddy comedy-esque banter that we're going to see. People are going to want the actual fight between Logan and Deadpool. And as I'm talking to you about this, I'm wondering whether or not the fight scene we're going to see between Logan and Wolverine is going to happen immediately as one of those, like, we have to fight before we become teammates and all that other stuff, or is this something that happens at the end where it's like only one of you can survive this battle and all that. However, there was something that was kind of weird to me. It looked like Wade and Logan were jumping through the endgame portal. And if that's the case, I'm wondering if they're going to kind of like make it seem as if they were in the MCU the entire time. Because there is an actual scene in She-Hulk where Jennifer Walters, or maybe her assistant or best friend, was reading something online. And it said, man with metal claws gets in fight in a bar. So if Logan just happens to pop into the MCU or whatever during Endgame, maybe that actually was the Hugh Jackman Wolverine that we've seen, and who knows. I'm hoping. That would be super dope. That would mean that there was a mutant actually running around for a long time, and that could mean like the X-Men went through the portal too. Who knows? There were so many characters and random people that were in that fight, so it's easy to kind of put Logan and Deadpool in the middle of that without like it breaking continuity, because who knows who they could have been fighting while all that was going on. It's unlikely, but like I said, I'm hopeful. The other thing that kind of confused me was, what Logan are we looking at? Is this a Logan from the Fox universe, which would make the most sense? Or, that's all from the Fox universe, but is this Logan from the movies we've seen? Is this something from an alternate universe? It kind of seems like that, because Logan's not the one who failed his X-Men or the mutants. So maybe it's something different. And considering the TVA is involved and all this other stuff, and whoever Wade was talking to in the TVA explained how this universe's Wolverine failed or whatever. It could be someone different, which I think is a great idea, because the Wolverine that's needed for a Deadpool movie isn't necessarily the one that we've seen in the 9, maybe 10 projects Wolverine has been in. I am looking forward to it regardless. I'm looking forward to whatever Wolverine we're getting, but it made me think which Wolverine we're going to be looking at and if this is going to be someone different. And I'm also really interested in the backstory, which is going to be awesome regardless of which Logan it is, because how did he fail? Is this something similar to Old Man Logan, the comic book, where he was brainwashed into killing all the X-Men and now they're in a very Red Skull wasteland universe kind of thing? Or is this something different altogether we haven't seen? Oh man, there was a lot. There's still more going on. Then there's Cassandra Nova. Some people didn't know Cassandra Nova, who is Charles Xavier's sister, was in this movie. How does she fit into this? Did she figure out how to jump through realities? Do they end up in Genosha? And that's how Logan quote unquote failed mutant kind, because he wasn't there. He couldn't kill Cassandra Nova. Like, who knows? That fight where we saw Logan fighting her, that could have been something from the past. That doesn't necessarily mean that that happened during the continuity of Wade and Logan going to save the multiverse or whatever they're trying to save. There's so much that goes on with the idea of the multiverse that needs to be explained. But back to Cassandra Nova. Cassandra Nova in the Marvel comic books was Xavier's twin, who Xavier, I believe, absorbed in the womb. he tried to, one of them tried to kill the other one. I think Xavier tried to kill her. She prevented it, and she somehow died in within that. It's kind of weird. It's Grant Morrison, I believe. His new X-Men explains that perfectly. I think it's E for Extinction where they talk about that. Yeah, Grant Morrison's E for Extinction, New X-Men, is where you should probably go to read that. And at some point, I'll do a reread, and we can talk about, or I will talk about what happened within that so you can get more familiar with Cassandra Nova. But just know that Cassandra Nova is devious. She's evil. She's insanely powerful and has none of the hangups that Charles Xavier does. So it makes sense that she just completely destroyed Wolverine when he tried to attack. However, here's a funny thing about her if she tries to fight Wade. In the comic books, Deadpool can't be mind controlled. What did someone say? Trying to get into his head was like trying to grab an eel with oily gloves. So he can't be mind controlled. I believe you can't actually read his mind either. So while it looks like she has telekinesis, or maybe she was just controlling Logan's mind, that's an advantage that he has over her, which is the only advantage he'll have over her, because Cassandra Nova is an insanely powerful telepath. I don't think she's telekinetic, though. But that's always weird, because initially Xavier wasn't telekinetic, but over the last like 5 or 10 years, it's kind of like spotty on whether or not he is or he isn't. So who knows? I think that's all I got on the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. I'm happy about it. I like it. Let me know what you think. You can find me on oldmanwadecom, oldmanwade.com, on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok. Let me know what you think, because I'm actually curious to know what all of y'all are talking about so we could have a discourse about what it is. As long as you're nice about it. If you're going to be a jerk, then, you know, piss off. But yeah, I'm happy. I enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see what happens next. As soon as I get paid, I am going to buy my tickets for me and my wife. I'm going to buy them in Lux, because I am a bougie superhero movie goer. I want my space. I want my food. I want my ginger ale, because I can't drink beer during that, because I refuse to get up and pee during the movies and miss something, especially with something this epic. So yeah, and I also don't want any kids around me. Yes, I know the movie's going to be rated R, but for some reason, kids are still brought in there, so I don't want any parts of that. All right, so next up, we got X-Men 97. X-Men 97, so far, for me, has been a 10 out of 10. Every episode has been fantastic. They're hitting on the nostalgia part of the show, which is something everybody wanted, but they're also making a show for the people who watched that as a kid, who are now in their 30s or 40s, who have been doing that, in the comic book fans who know a lot of the stuff that's going on. Last week, we spoke about the tragedy in Genosha, which is something that, again, happened in Grant Morrison's New X-Men. So now, Xavier's alive. He's with the Shi'ar. He's with Lilandra. They're supposed to get married. They're supposed to be this whole thing, and they're like the trial and blah, 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 blah. During this, Xavier said to Lilandra, he asked her if she would consider having their royal, whatever the muck, on Earth. And she said she'd consider it, but because, as Deathbird said it, she goes, the Milky Way Ghetto, which is hilarious to me calling the Milky Way Ghetto. It's kind of funny to me. But I'm wondering, I lost my train of thought real quick. The one thing that I thought was funny about it was watching Xavier flex, in a sense, because he's a Omega level telepath, maybe the strongest telepath in the world. And the Shi'ar didn't really, they think, you know, primitive, Terran, blah, 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 not realizing that Xavier's that dude. And my favorite part about that was him basically telling the Shi'ar not to talk to him. Let me paint the picture for those. Sorry if I'm scatterbrained. Xavier's uses telepath to put all the prominent Shi'ar in class. And he's like, school is in session. We're going to talk about the things that you do. And he basically calls them out for all the horrible things they do. And it's funny Deathbird stands up and answers one of Xavier's questions in a loud, angry voice. And Xavier goes, "Raise your hand, demerits," which is hilarious to me. He really told this vicious warrior, called her out, said demerits, and sat her back down and threw an apple in her mouth. It was the funniest thing ever. So after all that, Xavier relinquishes his status in the Shi'ar, which I believe means that Lilandra and him are no longer engaged, because he found out about the tragedy in Genosha. So all he knows is that he needs to get back to Earth to go help his X-Men. Now, my best friend, Lavelle, pointed out that Xavier didn't see Magneto when he saw the tragedy. He saw Gambit. And we know that Xavier and Magneto have this really special bond. So why didn't he see Magneto when all this was going on? Why was the big picture Gambit? Now, from an audience standpoint, it's probably like, well, he had the most emotional death, and because not only because everyone loves Gambit, but he's also the one who saved millions of mutants from this Mother Sentinel. I can't remember what the actual Sentinel's called, but he saved him from the giant Sentinel that was destroying Genosha and killing mutants by the hundreds. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes him to get back to Earth. I don't know if it'll be the next episode. I'm thinking maybe towards the season finale, or maybe right at the end of the season finale. But it would be weird if he popped up in the next episode just because of everything else that's going on. The next episode is called Bright Eyes, and the description on IMDb says, "Cyclops focuses the X-Men on finding Bolivar Trask. However, when a team locates the Sentinel inventor, they realize that they have been played by a mastermind." I said this on the previous episode. Brandon and Javi thought I was wrong. I said, this is absolutely Mr. Sinister. At the end of the previous episode, we see that it was Sinister who was working with, or forcing Bolivar Trask to make these Sentinels and probably arming the Friends of Humanity. Again, we'll have to wait and see. If I'm not mistaken, as my buddy Lavelle said, they made it a point to mention that Sinister is the big bad in this season. Plus, in the mid-season recap, they pointed out, they highlighted a part where Sinister says, "You have no idea what's coming." And so that was obviously a foreboding comment from him, but we also see what he's done. And it's very unlike him it's not something he would do in the comic books, but we also have to remember, this isn't the comic books. This is a TV show. This is an alternate universe. This is the 90s. So who knows what happened? Because you know how the butterfly effect or the alternate reality effect. I forget exactly what it's called, but if you step on one thing, it sets everything else into another direction. And considering that something had happened in the 2000s, in the comic book happened in the late 90s in the cartoon, that completely shows that everything's different. So this isn't the Mr. Sinister that we've seen in the comic books. I'd like him to be a little sassier like we got him in the comic books, but he's still great regardless, so I'm not going to complain about that. One other thing before I move on to the stuff that I've been reading. Actually, no, before I move on to Invincible, one thing that has to be mentioned is Storm just being her. She had her powers taken away, and she's so powerful, and people forget that there is some magic in her DNA that she willed her powers back to existence. How dope is that? She just was just like, nah. She just grew her hair back, whole new uniform, all the lightning and all the wind and the thunder and all that, just willed it back to existence. That was one of the dopest moments that I've seen so far. And this has been a season of incredible collection of moments that come together and made a flawless show. There's no way to deny this. It's funny that you're not even seeing a lot of people complaining about the show in general. And that's also a mark of a really good show. And even the people who will say things go woke, go broke, or things of that nature, even they can't say anything bad about what's happening. And you gotta love it. You gotta love it. All right, so moving on to Invincible. The season finale dropped a couple of weeks ago. And I believe I've talked about it before, but I can't really remember off the top of my head. But it has to be mentioned because it was, for me, a show that dragged more than it should have. I didn't, and then like the mid-season break was like 4-4. That seemed kind of weird and all that. But considering that like what a creator creates, even when the product is quote-unquote done, they may want to go back and add something new to it. They may need to go fix something. Something may have happened. And I'm like, hey, we don't like the way this looks, so we need to alter this. Or maybe they need to bring in the voice actors to change some other things. So a lot of stuff goes on. And so whatever reason, show split. The second half, the first episode was cool. I was like, all right, there, we're going to get the Sequids, which was fine. There was some, it was weird seeing Eve and Robot get mind controlled by the Sequids, and like Mark had to use the robot's device again, which was kind of pointless, but I was like, whatever, maybe it'll lead to something. It didn't. Then the third episode of the second half of the season kind of like was cool, kind of dragged on, but then Anissa showed up and I'm like, oh yeah. And this is the one everyone's been waiting for. Anissa shows up, cool. But then, and this is the best part, Mark has his fight with Angstrom Levy, or Levi, I can't remember which one it is. And they fight. It's an amazing battle. The two of them are really, like, it's like Angstrom is, like, showing how tough of a fighter he is and how intelligent he is, the way he's throwing Mark all over different dimensions, kind of wearing him out. And one of the things that I loved is Mark mentioned while he was talking to, I want to say they were in the Walking Dead universe, another creation from Robert Kirkman, who also wrote Invincible. He was saying like he doesn't know how long he's been in these different universes because time moves differently. In all of them. For example, in the comic book where he met Spider-Man and in the show Agent Spider, he was there for, it looked like almost a full day. In his reality, like a couple of minutes. So who knows how long he was actually gone in that other universe or any of the other universes, considering how time moves. So it wore him out. Eventually, Angstrom tells him that it wasn't just his body, that it wasn't just the healing that the universe he went to, it augmented his strength. Angstrom's beating Mark, they're fighting, and then Mark unleashes on him and looks like he kills him. And at the end of it, he was like, I thought you were strong enough. I thought you were strong enough. I thought I was strong enough. And I believe it was Brandon on his show, Why So Serious, where he talked about how he thinks that he was talking about himself. Or maybe it was my homie Camila who said that he was talking about himself when he says, I thought I was strong enough. It doesn't matter. But either which way, that happened. And the end of the episode was cool because, well, end of the episode with Mark was great because him and Adam Eve had a moment. In the comic books, she just shows up and goes, are we dating or not? And it was kind of weird because, like, looking back at it, especially considering how well it was done in the TV series, how she didn't do that because it would seem kind of toxic, like her just like jumping all over him after he just broke up with someone that he loved. It would have been weird. I'm still hoping we get that moment where she's like, are we dating or not? Just because it was a pretty funny moment. But it would have been too soon if it happened like a few hours after having that fight with Angstrom, Levi, whatever, and Amber breaking up with him. But hopefully we'll get a Invincible next year. I think they said they already started work. I think they were working on season 3 while they were working on season 2. So we may actually get that early 2025, I would assume. It would be cool if they just threw it out of nowhere and was just like, hey, coming back in November, a year after the other one. That'd be great. There's no writer strike. There's no actor strike. So who knows? It's possible. It's not likely, but it's possible. Overall, if I would have had to rank or rate this season before watching the series finale, I would have given it a 7. And a lot of that has to do with my comic book bias and my anticipation for it. I would have given it a 7. After seeing everything that happened in the season finale, I'm going to give it a strong 8.5, maybe even a 9. There are some things that I would have changed, but overall, it was still a really impressive show that I think people are going to love going forward. But it also has to be mentioned that if you think things are bad now, you haven't seen a damn thing yet. Because in the Invincibles, social media pages discussed, kind of dropped a hint on Mark's blue and black suit coming up in the next season. For those of you who've never read the comic books, the blue and black costume represents the worst time in Mark's life, not just as a human, but as a super, not just as a civilian, but also as a superhero. He's going to make so many mistakes. He's going to be more aggressive, angrier. You're going to see a completely different Mark than you've witnessed in the previous seasons. I kind of like the way that's been done because it's the build-up to this seems like the build-up to see the second half of season 2 or even the season finale kind of seemed like it was the lead-up to him trying to deal with the PTSD from everything that's happened. And in this situation, it's just made him more aggressive. He's trying to figure things out. And as I've mentioned on this podcast and on the Bandsmack Pal Live, people forget, Mark's 17 years old. He may be 18 now. No, I don't think he's 18 because I know his 18th birthday, he watched zombie movies with his friend and that moment hasn't happened yet. So he's only 17 years old and he has the weight of the world on his shoulder. Like he just saved Earth from destruction. And maybe if the Sequoia didn't, imagine if the Sequoia made it to Earth. They may have said, you know what, we're going to go try to conquer another world, and then another world, and another world. So he may have saved multiple worlds or even the universe, considering what he prevented. Either way, I think the Invincible gets about an 8 or a 9 for that. So I'm happy with it, and I can't wait for the next season. It's going to be heartbreaking watching all this stuff. I'm tempted to do a reread just to see the stuff that's coming up because I'm going to have to write some articles about it. I'm going to have to do some podcasting about it. So I should probably keep that fresh in my head. But who knows when they're going to get back to that. So I got time. All right. Last but not least, I'm going to get you guys caught up on some of the stuff that I've been reading. Just kind of quick hits on the... Looks like I have 16 things on this list. First up, we have Avengers Twilight. And Avengers Twilight was... The story is H Day basically had the world a wake-up call of what superheroes being outlawed, people with powers, like mutants, like and all this other stuff, so you couldn't use your abilities. Come to find out that Red Skull was behind all of it after all. It ends up being a really good series, despite this hot kind of having a very base and familiar storyline, but Chip Zdarsky did a fantastic job of making it new and fresh by kind of giving you the Avengers you want to see, seeing how some new Avengers were created. Like there was a Marine who was Bullseye in the Marines. She ends up becoming Hawkeye, which is dope. Thor's back. Kamala Khan is an adult with 2 kids, and she's like Miss Marvel again. You find out that H Day didn't stand for Hero Day. It actually stand for Hulk Day because the Hulk was actually the one who caused all the destruction that basically forced humanity and S.H.I.E.L.D. to be like, nah, no more metahumans. Next up is Wonder Woman number 8 by Tom King. It's been fantastic. It's been perfect. It's been a 10 out of 10 each issue. In this one in particular, Wonder Woman breaks the lasso of lies, which is supposed to be an unbreakable Amazonian weapon, or Amazon weapon. And it wasn't just the physical act of it. It was her willpower when she was being told that she was like a 60s housewife who basically just let her husband berate her and stuff like that. And her breaking that control was incredible. Next up is Fall of X by, I don't know who that is. I'm not sure if it's Jerry Duggan or Garen Killen. I can't remember which one of them did that, but Xavier's a dick. He betrays everyone, thinks he knows better than his X-Men and all the other heroes who have legitimately been fighting for weeks, if not months, to like fight back on Orcus. And he's like, no, I know better than that, and blah, blah, blah. And so he's just a dick. And I can't wait till he gets his comeuppance because it's well-deserved. Magneto told Storm that like something like this was going to happen, and he was right. It did happen. The Fall of X also has been a flawless series thus far. Like, it's the last era, last run of the Krakoan era, which in July we get rising from the ashes, or excuse me, from the ashes. The X-Men will be the next era, will be rising from the ashes, I should say. Next up, Nightwing 113 or 300. It's a happy issue. Dick gets the key to the city. Everything's happy. Everything's great. And so now you know it's about, shit's about to hit the fan. I believe the next Nightwing series is called The Fall of Grayson, which is kind of similar. Well, not similar. It's, how can I put this? Sorry about that. I had to actually Google it. So it's not Fall of Grayson. It's called Fallen Grayson. And the images that have come out of the covers and some of the interior art from the series by Tom Taylor is Nightwing with a beard, which is weird, him looking a little disheveled, and with everything that happened in the previous issue 113 and /300, you know something awful is about to happen to him. I'm wondering if there's going to be a scandal. Is the world going to find out that he's Nightwing? Does he accidentally kill someone? Does he make the mistake of not saving somebody because he has his fear of heights now? But whatever it is, Heartless is involved, and this is gonna start the final run of Tom Taylor's Nightwing, which has been amazing from start to finish. So I'm looking forward to that. Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 19. Miles keeps getting better. There's no other way to put it. Like, he's becoming a smarter hero, a stronger hero, and a better hero, and I love it. Roxxon presents Thor number 1 was goofy and hilarious. They're telling a story about how Thor, they're redoing Thor's origin story and how he's basically Roxxon's bitch. Like, Mjolnir has Roxxon across from it. He's opening, like, he doesn't fly with his hammer. He's in a Roxxon sponsored truck, which kind of looks like the I think it's the Elon Musk truck. All of it is just basically a knock on all of, like, the guys like Elon Musk and I forget the dude from Amazon. I almost called him Tony Ayo. This is a parody on all of that, and it's really well done. But again, Al Ewing, who writes that, is always on his game, and so I can't wait to see what's next with that. Spectacular Spider-Man, it's featuring Miles and Peter. Their relationship is, it's great. Like, this is everything you'd want from a Spider-Man book, because it's not just Peter leading Miles. Miles is actually helping Peter realize some things. They're kind of working together. The premise is Miles called out Peter for not being there for him as a person. So Peter's trying to be a better friend. And so they meet up, I want to say once every week or once a month. And this leads to shenanigans as always. But it's been cool. It's been full of quips when they're in their Spider-Man gear. Watching the evolution of Miles in general is great. But watching Peter allow Miles to be a different Spider-Man and him adjusting to that, awesome. Definitely issue number 2. Definitely worth the read. Spider-Boy has been goofy. It's been fun. The last couple of issues is starting to get darker, and I can't believe that, like, I'm enjoying Spider-Boy as much as I did. I like Dan Slott, so I'm not shocked by this. But I didn't expect to actually go into this and really see the kind of depth that we were going to get from that. And again, there was a lot of depth in Superior Spider-Man, despite people not liking it. He also did Spider-Verse, which was one of the best Spider-Man crossovers ever, so shouldn't be shocked. And finding out that, I can't remember Spider-Boy's real name, but he found out that his mother was actually alive. He's not an orphan, but she's actually a animal hybrid from something. And, like, he's shocked, and she doesn't remember him because of something that happened in a previous Spider-Man series called End of the Spider-Verse by Dan Slott. Then this is where we first see Spider-Boy, and when someone was stabbed by a particular blade, there it changed all of existence from like what it was. Like Peter in this universe, Peter Parker never got bit by a spider. It was actually Cindy Moon, who what is her name? Silk. Silk was actually the one who got bit, and she became like the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Woman, or Friendly Neighborhood Silk. And Peter was actually making weapons and gadgets for her, but people forgot he was Spider-Man. Now, once the series came to wrap back up, certain people were remembered and certain people weren't. So apparently, this entire time, Spider-Man had a partner called, a sidekick called Spider-Boy, and no one remembered him. So it's kind of cool that they did that, and I'm shocked that I actually really enjoyed this. Yeah, for the most part, that's pretty much all. You don't need to hear my voice for much longer. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for joining me. You can find me at oldmanwadecom, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. That's all I got. Until next time, be excellent to each other. Peace.